My job with IJM is primarily theological development, mobilization of Christian leaders. And so I work with a bunch of lawyers and cops and undercover investigators, social workers, accountants, photographers, graphic designers, pretty much every kind of person that's needed in this work. And you'll find all sorts of people at our headquarters office. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of a view of where I'm coming from. And certainly there are a lot of things we could get into in terms of the biblical mandate, but part of me feels like maybe that's not what you need to be taught on this morning. And I'd like to just open the floor to some questions. We don't have a lot of time left. So go ahead, Rachel.
Okay. You say you're in DC. I was wondering if there's any like legislation or anything like that that we should be contacting the prisoners about on this issue. Is there anything like going on right now or in the works?
Yeah, there is a bill in the works, actually. Quite regularly, there's an act called the Child Protect Act, which comes up, or the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, the TVPA, that gets reauthorized, I think almost on an annual basis, and that's what determines funding for these issues locally and internationally. So it's very important for your representatives to know you want that act reauthorized every year, the TVPA. But there's another bill that my colleagues in our Government Relations Department in DC are working on right now that is still in the draft stages, but if you want to email me, I'm just trying to think of the best way to give you all the way to contact me, I can get you more information through them on how they're drafting the bill, who they're pulling in to get that done. It's a partnership with other organizations, and they'll be working hard to push that through. My email address is bhoang@ijm.org.
Go ahead. Well, one thing that people could do if they want to get information is come over to the IJM table and we'll be able to contact you.
Oh, thank you. What's your name?
Mary Collin.
You're helping us? Thank you so much. I'm so sorry. It's really embarrassing. Normally, I would have been at that table last night, but again, I just got hit with some really odd sickness or allergy or something last night, and I'm just praising God that I was able to speak this morning. So sorry I didn't get to meet you yet. Thank you for saying that. Oh, great. Mark Fisher, yes. Okay, I know all of your names and I haven't actually met you. The three of you, would you mind standing up? Because you're great. Please. You all are a great example of how to engage. Started a few years ago as a pilot up in the Pacific Northwest, and now we're rolling out to California, Texas, Southeast, different areas of the country where we have people who say, yes, train me. I want to know how to speak about issues of injustice. I want to be sent to churches, mission conferences, rock concerts, wherever opportunities might come up. And I can be on the ground for you when it doesn't make sense to fly people all over the country. There's people who are all over the country ready to speak and raise their voice and mobilize others. So that's what they're doing. And they're at the IJM table, and they've been doing the real work these last couple of days of getting people connected. So if you're interested in being a justice advocate, that's a way that I'd encourage you as well to just pursue. And it is a formal training program, but it's a volunteer role, and there's many different levels of ways to be involved as a justice advocate. So it's not like necessarily a huge hourly or weekly amount of hours per week. It's different for each person according to what kinds of gifts and what kind of time you have.
Is there any way to kind of categorize or level different countries on how severe the trafficking is in those countries, level 1, level 2, level 3?
Oh yeah, totally. And there actually is a formal categorization. The State Department's Trafficking in Persons Office, if you go to state.gov and then search for trafficking in persons or TIP report, every June a new report comes out summarizing where we're at with global slavery. And each year they kind of add more and more sides of the issue to it and give more focus to different aspects. Like bonded labor started to get a lot more focus in the last couple of years. But they take every single country in the world, and you can search by country. The website is phenomenal. It's just an amazing resource. And whenever I do long seminars, like with missionaries who are about to go out to other countries, we sit down and actually walk through different countries and use the website as a resource to figure out what's happening in that place that you might be going. So anywhere you might be going in the world, you can look up that country and find out, is it a tier three, meaning there's a huge trafficking issue and no one's doing anything about it in that country, and they are in danger of sanctions and other consequences. Tier two is there has been a severe trafficking issue, but there's significant things in place, significant laws that are actually being enforced, and so there's movement away from the trafficking issue. Tier two watch list means they were doing okay and they slipped back and they're in danger of tier three. And then tier one is those who are doing the most to actually fight the trafficking in their country. Was there a question back there?
Yeah, what was that website again? And how to find it?
Sure, sorry, I think I'm still not talking loud enough. It's state.gov. So state.gov. So it's the Department of State's website. And if you search for TIP report or trafficking in persons report, and they'll let you sort by country.
TIP report?
TIP, T-I-P, trafficking in persons. Oh, go ahead. Right. The State Department is mostly tracking how many people are being trafficked yearly. So they'll say 600,000 to 800,000 people are being trafficked. And that doesn't even mean they have to cross international borders. Their definition of trafficking is forced. So anyone who's being forced into a form of labor or prostitution against their will. So they say that 600,000 to 800,000, and then within the United States, the estimate is about 17,500. But the 27 million statistic comes from Kevin Bales' organization, Free the Slaves. It's, I think, just freetheslaves.org. There we go, sorry, that's better there. So freetheslaves.org is a great research engine. And so we partner with them a lot, particularly in the government advocacy realm. But they have churned out remarkable statistics that have gotten picked up by National Geographic and all the major news outlets, and certainly the government funds them as well and validates the statistics that they're finding. Kevin Bales has a PhD from the London School of Economics, and he's dedicated his whole life to having accurate slavery statistics. So he's continually gathering better and better data, and he's written a bunch of great books as well. So it's a really helpful research organization, and they're located in DC too. Back. Great question. What steps can the church take to get involved in these issues? And can you all hear me in the back? Sorry. Okay, good, thank you. Let me just see if I can bring up a few visuals that might be helpful. Just briefly, these are the primary areas of casework that IJF works on around the world. So certainly the slavery in terms of forced labor and the sex trafficking issues, but also unprosecuted rape, which is a pandemic that fuels the AIDS virus. It's on its own, it's a huge issue, and it contributes significantly to the spread of AIDS. Illegal detention, somewhere between 50 to 85% of those who are in prison in the world today. Whether they're innocent or guilty, they're actually there in the developing world without having had formal charges brought against them. So no due process of law, even in countries where due process is required. So that is a great issue affecting the poor, along with police brutality. The World Bank did a study and discovered that, as a rule, the poorest of the poor find the police to be a source of insecurity to them. Whereas we, even though we don't like getting pulled over for a traffic ticket, in general, the police are a source of security for us to go to. It's the exact opposite for the poorest of the poor. And there's significant police brutality property grabbing is an issue primarily affecting AIDS, widows, and orphans in Africa, and something we can talk about a lot more, but we're at the trafficking conference, so we'll stay focused. And I'm going to get to those church slides in just 1 minute. We'll just cover this. I mentioned this morning, but these are the four outcomes we look for in every single case that we take. So when we take cases, we're looking for what's the likelihood that we can get this done. Victim rescue, get them out of the place of suffering that they're in. Arrest the perpetrator so they can't continue bringing others in, and so that other perpetrators get the message that accountability is at hand. Get the victim into a place of aftercare and new life. Safety, a safe home. And then structural transformation. That's like in Cambodia, where with our first set of raids years ago, just kept getting tipped off over and over again, where the police would take bribes from the brothel owners. Now, for the last 4 years, we've been training the Cambodian National Police. The Deputy Prime Minister asked us to set up a training program with a sex trafficking unit, and they now actually lead the way for us. They take us to places we couldn't find on our own. They perform their own raids. There's been a huge structural transformation in the entire country, and that's where we're going as an organization over the next 10 years, is still doing individual victim rescue, but working in strategic ways to see overall structural transformation. And this is where we're located currently around the world. Okay, so ways that you can get involved, either for your whole church or for you personally, and you pulling in people one by one with you. First of all, this is just my own area of work, so I have to give it priority. The IJM Institute, this is what I'm the director of, and this is primarily exists for Christian leaders. So it's a website, first of all, IJMInstitute.org. But I encourage you to visit it on a daily basis. We've had a little bit of an unofficial hiatus over the last couple of weeks because I've had heavy travel, but in general, we post on a daily basis. And you'll find everything from global news stories from around the world that are very helpful to see what's going on in other countries that you won't find on the front page of your newspaper, but trafficking stories, that sort of thing. You'll find urgent prayer requests. So when we get wind of something happening in one of our field offices and we need urgent prayer, we will put it on the Institute. Sometimes it'll be very cryptic. You won't know what country or what city you're praying for because it's such a sensitive operation, but we want a way to draw you in urgently in the moment. And we've seen an incredible synergy between our prayer partners and our field staff because people start posting prayers for people in the field. And then, like we've had one situation in South Asia where the field staff actually started reading through the prayers that people were posting on the Institute as their time of devotion before they headed out on a raid with the police. And it's just an incredible way to connect very disparate parts of the world to people who are willing to be praying right there in the moment. So that happens on the Institute. It's also a place where we highlight new resources and tools and ideas for action. So I encourage you to be a part of that community. We're also, is anyone here on Twitter? IJM has several different Twitter accounts too. The IJM Institute, our headquarters office, happenings at headquarters. But these are, you can just ignore the bullet points up there, but these books are books that Gary Haugen has written about the work, with the exception of this over here, The Justice Journey, on the far right-hand corner. That's actually a handbook for church leaders, volunteers, pastors, whoever is charged in a church to kind of lead the church forward. It's a pretty thick handbook of ideas of what to do. So what do you actually want to do? And again, if you send me an email, I can send that to you. You can get it as a download off of our website, but I'd be happy to just send it to you because it's fun to connect. So that's called The Justice Journey. But the books are also very helpful. They give you a vivid picture of the work and further underpinnings of the biblical foundation of all of this. These are other resources just in terms of doing Bible studies or what you can preach on. I created a sermon outline. Also would be happy to send you, just let me know if you want that. It just gives you basic stories and scriptural teachings in a suggested flow in case you ever want to write your own sermon or write your own message for a Bible study and just start practicing yourself. How do I teach about these issues? How do I speak about these issues? And that's something we just want to be able to equip you to do, just about biblical justice in general. And certainly want to encourage you to start looking for what is going on in your own community. So IJM, again, we are focused completely on the developing world in terms of how we deploy our lawyers and our criminal investigators. But there is so much happening here in the United States. It's a great testing ground for figuring out what trafficking really looks like and what it's all about. It's to just start with your own city and to get connected with your local law enforcement, with organizations like Not For Sale and the Polaris Project that really have a good pulse on what's happening. There are trafficking coalitions that are starting to spring up in cities all over the country. So great models right now are Atlanta, Denver, Charlotte, Portland, San Francisco, certainly. But these are what we want to be doing actually over the summer is writing stories of what these local trafficking coalitions are doing to paint a more vivid picture of how to get involved locally. And then hopefully that'll continue to propel your imagination about global involvement too, and vice versa. Justice campaigns we touched on just a little bit. This is our most recent advocacy day up on Capitol Hill. We invited a group of about 100 people to go with us to deliver Appalachian Senator cards and to talk to their representatives. And just we spent a whole day training on talking points. And that's something that we plan to do quite a bit more through our government relations team. And then prayer. Obviously, you all know this is something that is just very close to my heart. And something that I think I just feel like God is teaching me more about every day, especially as I interact with our field staff and see what they need to keep going every day. So becoming a prayer partner is one of the most valuable things you could ever do for IJM. If you're wondering how to encourage us or to connect with us, it's just, we can't say enough about that. But we also have this global prayer gathering every spring with about 900 people. We try to keep it intimate-ish, so it's, there is a cutoff point at 900. But we bring in our field staff from all over the world to actually, it's in some ways better than going overseas for a short amount of time because you can actually meet with people from every country and learn from them firsthand. What are the struggles in their work? What have been the big victories this year? And it's just a time purely of prayer and worship. It's not a time of fundraising or of other action focuses. It's just a time of prayer and worship. And starting a local prayer movement is significant. Also, if you go on a mission trip anywhere in the world, taking time to figure out where are the red light districts, where are the places where oppression is happening, and do prayer walks. We actually have a little mission training guide. Might have a picture of it, but it's meant to, it's called As You Go. It's a resource on our website, and it's meant to give you equipping for wherever you go in the world on short-term missions so that you can have an idea of what can I do when I'm there? Say we're going to build a house or to visit sponsored children. What can we do to be justice-focused to what we're doing as well? So what would a Bible study look like, you know, just once while we're there? Or what would it look like to open our eyes to issues of violence in the community in addition to what we're already going to do? So certainly justice and mercy are inextricable, but they're also quite distinct. So there's new ways that we can lead this justice frontier in our short-term mission, even. Question over here?
Are there specific projects within IGN, like state homes, that churches can allot a certain amount of money to?
Mm-hmm. She's wondering about certain projects like safe homes that churches could give money to. So certainly, there's always ways to target your money, but aftercare is a big one. We've had churches, one of my favorite stories of the last few months is this church in Southern California that said that they're about, sorry, I was trying to lose my train of thought, but it's just a great story. So they heard about what was going on in the Philippines, one of our offices in the Philippines, and they met one of our social workers and heard that there wasn't enough good aftercare. and that, in fact, they weren't sure that they were going to be able to do the next rescue that came along because they had to have somewhere to take the girls. You can't just rescue and then not have a safe home to take them into. So this church said, well, you know, we're in the middle of a building program right now, but maybe we don't need that building after all. Maybe we could build an aftercare home. And the thing that's amazing about this church is they actually are a church of 80 people. So they weren't, I expected when I heard the story, oh, it's a big mega church, or just kind of like high part of their building program, or you know, something like that, which that in itself would be amazing. But this church of 80 people just said, nothing's too big for God, we want to be a part of this, and they moved quickly too. So they got this aftercare home off of the ground, and the next rescue, as soon as that aftercare home was built, there was a place for those girls to go. And it was just absolutely an incredible testimony. And there were certainly problems along the way and things that just didn't go smoothly. And but we just worked out those kinks. And they were just willing to be very persevering and to move and to be focused on the goal at hand. So there's stories like that of churches doing all sorts of just amazingly brave things. So, pastor and his wife from Agape International Missions. They were living here in California and just moved over to Cambodia to run the Agape aftercare home. And Chanda and Kunti, who I mentioned earlier today, mm-hmm. I met them when I was in Cambodia a couple of years ago. And they are now, I met them right after they've been rescued, and they now live in that Agape International Mission home. There's a table for Agape in the little village. They live in that home, and it's a state-of-the-art home. It's just beautiful and cares for the girls so well. So aftercare is, most of our work with aftercare is through partnerships, but we gladly find ways for churches to know how to make aftercare better or how to build new aftercare where it doesn't exist yet. An organization called Love 146, love146.org, they just finished an aftercare home. It is beautiful. It's a round home so that there's no sharp edges and no one is left in a corner. And just they had an incredible vision and worked with professional social workers to make it happen. So I could go on and on about that. But yeah, that's a really fertile area.